Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, the perfection of renunciation. I believe we're up to text 29, which I'm going to start to read. Pudirabhedam dites chaiva gunatastri vidam shinu prochamanam asheshena pritakvena dananjaya Bude of intelligence, Vedam, the differences, Drite of steadiness, Cha also, Eva certainly, Gunata by the modes of material nature, Chividam of three kinds, Shinu. Just here, prochamanam, as described by me, asheshena, in detail, pritakvena, differently, dananjaya, a winner of wealth. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A winner of wealth. Now please listen as I tell you in detail of the different kinds of understanding and determination according to the three modes of material nature. Prabhupada, after explaining knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower in three different divisions according to the modes of material nature, the Lord is explaining the intelligence and determination of the worker in the same way. Text 30. Pravitim jana vritim cha karya karya baya baya panda moksha chiaveti buddhi saparta satviki. O Sanaprita, that understanding by which one knows what ought to be done, what ought not to be done, what is to be feared and what is not to be feared, what is binding and what is liberating, is in the mode of goodness. Purport. Performing actions in terms of the directions of the scriptures is called pravritti, or executing activities that deserve to be performed. And actions which are not so directed are not to be performed. One who does not know the scriptural injunctions or directions becomes entangled in the actions and reactions of work. Understanding which discriminates by intelligence is situated in the mode of goodness. Yaya dharma madhamam cha karya karya karyam cha karyam eva cha ayatavat prajanati buddhi saparte rajasi. O Sanaprita, that understanding which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, is in the mode of passion. Adharmam dharmam itiya manyate tamasavritaha sarvatam viparitamscha buddhi saparte tamasi. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion under the spell of illusion and darkness and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. Purport, intelligence in the mode of ignorance is always working the opposite way it should. It accepts religions which are not actually religions and rejects actual religion. Men in ignorance understand a great soul to be a common man, and accept a common man as a great soul. They think truth to be untruth, and accepts untruth as truth. In all their activities, they simply take the wrong path. Therefore, their intelligence is in the mode of ignorance. In the sequence of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is now explaining about perception or consciousness in different modes of material nature, so that one can understand what the direction of life should be. In other words, human life is an opportunity to make decisions. And those decisions are, as Krishna says, aporyamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamiyam pravishanti sarve sashanti matnoti nakama kami. That a person is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled, but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the person who strives to satisfy such desires. In other words, this body is a machine, and it's been programmed mainly by our past activities, or the activities in this lifetime, either spiritual or material, to produce certain thoughts that run through our mind. And in America, they have these Ferris wheels, where they have this, you go around in a horse or whatever, an elephant, and the children ride around on this Ferris wheel, carousel. You've seen that? They don't have that in Europe? Yeah. It's a carousel. The children get on this horse or elephant. And then in America, at least, they have these rings. That if you catch the ring, you get a free ride. Of course, the little kids are that far, and the ring is far away, so only the adults get a free ride. But once around is usually good enough for them. In any case, that's what the material world is like. Thoughts are going through our mind, and we get a chance to catch one of them. Thinking about them as they flow through our mind, then we feel, and then we will, that's the one I want. She's the one I want, or he's the one I want. And then we catch it. And by desiring, of course, we don't really catch it. We simply think, feel, and will. That's all we do. That's in the spiritual world, thinking, feeling, willing is activity. And here in the material world, thinking, feeling, willing produce activity. Not exactly we're doing anything, but our thinking, feeling, willing, the same thing that goes on in the spiritual world, because that means we're alive, that's produces, Krishna understands what we're thinking, feeling, willing, just like one can understand the flavor of a flower by smelling it. And therefore, Krishna, by his will, parashya shaktir vividaiva shuyate swabhavaki gyanabala kriyacha, by his will, he orders material nature to arrange itself is what we're seeing now. It's an inconceivable machine that every moment Krishna is completely conscious of everyone's past, present, future, desires at the present, and he has a formula where he manifests the material energy in different varieties of ways according to these endless combinations of desires for the soul, thinking, feeling, willing, and the material nature arranges itself accordingly, and therefore activities go on. Now, out of all those desires, some of them are in the mode of goodness, some of them are in the mode of passion, some of them are in the mode of ignorance. But if you're in ignorance, desires, and we're convinced that those are the right desires. It's not that I think, oh, I'm in ignorance. No one thinks one is in goodness and everyone else is in ignorance. Just like I said, in Africa, there's a tribe in South Africa. They believe that if you're alive, you're good. And if you're dead, you're bad. So if you kill your enemy, then you're good, because he's bad, because he's dead. Very simple philosophy. Doesn't require a whole lot of education. But that's their philosophy, and they believe in it. They have faith. Now, we may smile or even laugh, or because we're a little bit more sophisticated. But that's their philosophy, and they believe it. So similarly, there's so much ignorance in modern society that they believe, for instance, if you tell them you're not your body, they'll become insulted. How dare you insult me? That you're a soul. They believe the soul is the mind. Most even religious people believe that the soul is the mind. In other words, they have no real idea about reality, the eternal position of the soul, at least not especially in the Western world, amongst vast numbers of people. But they believe that the whole idea of we are the body. And the whole idea of the whole purpose of life, as Krishna says, chintyam aparayam cha pralayantam upashita. The whole purpose of life is just to gratify the senses. Or as they say in Spanish, briga yena corazón contento. You know what that means? Yes, if your stomach's full, your heart is pleased. So that's a common belief. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, that's the purpose of life. And if you are become expert at that, then you're making progress. The more you can eat, sleep, mate, and defend. But Krishna has another idea, another reality is being expressed in the Bhagavad Gita, and therefore there's another opportunity to develop thoughts that we can agree to think about, feel about, and will to carry out. Those thoughts are in the Bhagavad Gita as a summary of all the other thoughts in Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, etc. So if we hear these thoughts and we capture them within our mind, for instance, if we hear Pravitim cha, Nivritim cha, Karya Karya Vaya Vaya, Bandham cha, Yogi Bandham cha, Veti, Buddhi Siddhartha, Sattvaki, that one who knows what's to be done and what's not to be done, what's liberating, what's binding, what is to be feared, what is not to be feared, is the mode of goodness. In other words, there's a philosophy, a vision, a reality which is in the mode of goodness, and those thoughts and those ideas are explained throughout Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. And one who accepts them, in other words, we have to hear about things, first of all, then we have to analyze them. Now, most people hear things all the time. Their analyzation is not very strong. Matter of fact, people don't really think that analyzing things has any value at all. As Manidhar once said when he went out and distributed books in Germany, people look at the book, the only thing they related to is what flavor it might be. They used to, everything is, if it's brown, then they think of chocolate, and if they like chocolate, they buy the book, because it reminds them of their favorite flavor. So that's not a very deep analyzation of things. So, analyzation means we hear, but unless we capture what we've heard, there's nothing to analyze. If everything goes in one ear and bounces off it, or if it goes in one ear and there's nothing in between the next ear and it just goes through, it's very hard to capture it. And unless we capture things and assimilate them, see them from different points of view, pray to Krishna, believing that to understand things, because Krishna is right there, and he actually reciprocates with our desire. Now, if we don't capture something, there's nothing to desire to understand. And if we capture something, but we don't really try to understand it, we just repeat it in our minds or externally, just like a parrot, then we're not really using our intelligence very much. We're not understanding it properly. I remember one time in Dallas, we had this contest. I was a temple president of Austin, Texas, but I used to go up to Dallas regularly with our Sankirtan party. And they had deities, they had Radha Kalachandri, so they had Mahaprasadam. So the idea was if you could memorize a chapter in the Bhagavad Gita and recite it, then you would get the Mahab that day. So there were devotees, one whose name was Leela Smarana. That was the whole thing, they would memorize the Bhagavad Gita. So I'd always be one chapter behind them. So I never got the Maha. But one time Prabhupada came to Dallas, and Leela Smarana and this other devotee, boy, they're only like 5 or 6 years old, getting a little fat from all the Maha they're eating. That was the time when we used to eat. When you go to Dallas, if you could actually find, experience the remnants of our prasadam back then, because we used to eat in this sanctuary, which had a wooden floor, and literally we ate off of wax paper, which is all right until you put the doll on it. hot doll on wax paper doesn't usually combine very well. Anyhow, that's why the maha was so desirable. So, Prabhupada, they had Lila Smarnam and this other devotee reciting the verses from the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada stopped them and said, so what does it mean? Lila Smarnam goes, I don't know. They never gave us maha for knowing the meaning. So Prabhupada said, this is useless. She's like a parrot. We don't need parrots. So the idea is we capture something in our mind, then we see it, we pray to Krishna, because that's called desire. Everyone is actually praying to Krishna 24 hours a day. There's nothing but prayers to Krishna in this material world. Desire is simply a subtle form, as Prabhupada says, writes, as conditioning, but desire is the prayer that we're making to Krishna, because he's the one who's fulfilling it through his energy. So Krishna is aware of our desires and he's making the arrangements, either spiritual and material, according to what we want. But if we have no idea what Krishna is talking about in Bhagavad Gita, we don't analyze it, it doesn't become assimilated, then it just flows through our mind like every other idea. It flows in one way and out the other way. So we have to capture it and then analyze it. For instance, what does the mode of goodness mean practically? What does it mean, pravitim cha, nivritim cha, karya karma? What does it actually mean in practical everyday activities? And that's what this is. For instance, when there was a 1972, when I was a temple president, same place in Austin actually, and then there was this big meeting of the GBC, some of the members of the GBC, and they were going to centralize all the different assets in the temples. Mostly it was only North America, but a few other countries in the world too. And they were going to hand out whatever was necessary to these different temple presidents. So Prabhupada didn't like that idea. He didn't like the fact that the GBC had made, some of the members had unauthorizedly made a meeting without even informing Prabhupada. And the first thing I found out about, Prabhupada wrote a letter to all the temple presidents and said, don't listen to the GBC, I've dissolved the GBC. Which was not a big problem for me because my GBC was like thousands of miles away. It came once every year or something. So I didn't listen to the GBC anyhow because there was nothing to listen to. Anyhow, and the GBC wasn't as, you know, this... It was some group of no one. I didn't know what it was all about. All I knew it was supposed to be something. It was my authority, but exactly how I didn't really know. Anyhow, so he dissolved the GBC. He said, "For now on, just communicate directly with me." Prabhupada said. So as it turned out, that Prabhupada didn't like this idea of centralization, as we probably know by now. And then he wrote a letter to Hansaduta Prabhu, and he said, you're making all these big, big plans to centralize everything. Everyone's going to come begging to you for whatever they need. He said, but actually you're making all these big plans at these meetings, but I see that the important things you're not talking about. And Prabhupada said one of the important things was that I see before they take prasadam, they don't wash their hands. What to speak of after? He said, that's important. That's what you should be talking about. So these things, this is what's important, is the mode of goodness. And the main thing in the mode of goodness, as in a sannyas committee, sannyas ministry, we've been talking, because in the sannyas ministry, we have these different committees. We have one for overall, we have our standing committee, which is the main committee, which is the most senior devotees. And then we have our task, which analyzes, takes all the different information from all the different committees and analyzes to make a recommendation to the GBC. And then we have a TSCS, which gives each candidate, and there's around 30 of them, different action learning projects. And then we have a mission committee, which sends them out different places in the world to do missions. And then we have an educational committee, which we have seminars. For instance, we have a GBC college, we have a sannyas college once a year for 2 weeks, 8 hours a day for training. So we have all this information, we have to make an evaluation. So what we did, what we're doing, is on TASC, the Team for Assessment of the Sannyas Candidates, we have assigned each, some of our members, to figure out what the duties of a sannyasi are, according to Bhagavad Gita. In other words, Krishna has made it, our service actually quite simple. We have a fallen microphone here. Has made our service quite simple, because he said, Abhayam Sattva Samshudira Jnana Yoga Vyavastiti. We don't have to guess what the duties of a sannyasi are. We just have to find out what it means. What it, Abhayam, fearlessness, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, purity, what that actually means. Like Abhayam, fearlessness, Prabhupada writes in the purport, it means you depend upon Krishna. You know you're eternal. So it means eternality. You're situated in Brahman realization. And Sattva Samshudhira, purification of one's existence, means you see everyone as a spiritual being. You're free from sex life. And Jnana Yoga Vyavastiti, you see things from the Bhagavad Gita. In terms of you have knowledge of the spiritual soul and the super soul and the relationship between them. So that's the duty of a sannyasi. And then what does a sannyasi do? He preaches. So who does he preach to? He preaches to the brahmacharis. So you have to find out what the duties of a brahmachari are. Because that's what the duties of a sannyasi should be. He should preach to the brahmachari so he becomes elevated. What does elevation mean? It means he comes towards Abhayam Sattva Samshudhira Jnana Yoga Vyastiti. And what is that for a brahmachari? Swadaya. First he has to find out who he is, that he's not the body. And to do that he has to become brahmachari guru kule vasandanta guru arhitam vasavan nachivan nicho guru sarida sruida. He has to become humble. Could you imagine telling most of the brahmacharis nowadays you have to become submissive? What they think? Who do you think you are? Telling me I should become submissive. But that's the duty, that's what the sannyasis have to train. And also they should have an example, they should be an example, to train the brahmacharis in brahmachari guru kule vasandanta guru arhitam. They should become the friend of their guru, of their gurus. They should become submissive, they should become meek. They should think of their leadership in a favorable way. And they should become determined to follow their vows. So that's the duty of this. That's how the sannyasis are supposed to instill a sense of duty into the brahmacharis, and that develops, either they become a sannyasi from the brahmachari ashram, or they can become a grihastha. So what is the grihastha's duty? Dana, dhamma, stayagyas, cha. Sense of mind control, charity, and sacrifice. But then in the 13th chapter, in 8 to 12, Prabhupada mentions the duties of what a grihastha is to develop knowledge, for instance. Putra dara grihadishu. Nitya cha samachitya atvam. Putra dara grihadishu. Detachment from wife, children, home, and the rest. So that's what the grihastas are supposed to become. And how do they do that? Prabhupada said that for a grihastha, affection for his wife and children is natural. But it should be utilized in Krishna's service. So therefore the grihastha should sit morning and evening and should chant Hare Krishna together with their family and offer some food to the deity and hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. That's how grihastha develop knowledge. In fact, that's how we all develop knowledge. But that's what the sannyasis are supposed to preach to the grihasthas so they come to the transcendental platform of consciousness. That's the basic thing, is that everyone should have a program. That's what Prabhupada said in many different places. It doesn't matter who we are, we should have a morning program wherever we are. Even that Brahmin in the nectar of devotion, he had no temple, he had no money, he had nothing, but he had a program. He did a deity worship in his mind for years. So that's the whole idea, is to have a program so that that's what we think about. That's called Krishna consciousness. Krishna means we're trying to develop consciousness of Krishna. And we can only do that if we hear about Krishna. We assimilate the knowledge, we apply the knowledge, and by that application we become convinced it's real by experience. And then we apply it in skillfully in loving relationships with others, and that develops our pure spiritual character, which is the perfection of life. We become always absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna, and therefore we become just like Krishna, like the iron in the fire. Same quality as Krishna. So here Krishna is giving us some idea about the qualities, and eventually these qualities in the mode of goodness will be how one acts in the mode of goodness will be exemplified at the end of this particular section, where Krishna explains about the qualities of the Brahman, the qualities of the Kshatriya, the activities of the Vaishya, and the activities of the Shudra. In other words, everyone according to the mode of material nature has the opportunity to become elevated either by following the duties of the particular varna and ashrams, or by hearing and chanting about Krishna. At the same time, executing our duties according to our psychophysical nature. So the hearing can elevate one quickly from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion to the mode of goodness, if our minds become filled with Krishna consciousness of Krishna. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati kriyate katopi labhyate. So Krishna consciousness doesn't mean just to sometimes think about Krishna or memorize to take a class or get a bhakti shastri degree or any other degree. That's not what Krishna consciousness is. It's the beginning of Krishna consciousness, to have the knowledge and then to assimilate it, as sometimes some of these courses inspire the devotees to assimilate this knowledge, but then to apply it with conviction, of which book distribution is one of the principal ways of applying with a conviction. We may know so many quotes, but when we go out there, we see the conditioned souls and we don't feel compassion for them. I mean, that's pretty advanced. If we don't feel we should sell them something and get a donation from them for their benefit and for our benefit too, then we've missed the whole point of all this knowledge. It all boils down to that. We want to hear and chant about Krishna and become convinced that everyone out there, everyone is an eternal servant of Krishna, and we should try to do something to help them, remind them of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction. Remember one time I dropped off my men, the devotees who were on my Sankirtan party in Radha Damodar. We used to drop them off all over some town somewhere. And then I have to go out and do my quota too. So I was going out trying to distribute the books, and everyone was like saying, get lost, you know. And I was thinking, these people are demons, you know. They deserve whatever they get. So I said, well, this is not a very good mentality, but maybe I should sit down and read something, trying to find out what I'm doing. So I was reading, and I couldn't read anything because my mind was so disturbed. So then I read it again and again and again. And finally I got the message that everyone is Krishna's servant. I said, wow, I didn't think about that one. So then I went out with some enthusiasm. Oh, you're Krishna's servant? Here, take the book. And they said, yeah, sure. How much can I give you for it? So my mentality changed and my whole experience changed also, what I was out there for. So that's what we have to do. We have to not only get this knowledge, we have to, and then with conviction, apply it in some way to our service, to try to please Krishna. And in spite of any kind of obstacles that we may encounter, we go on with our service. That's called conviction. That knowledge is something you can argue on, and conviction is something you die for. We have a lot of devotees arguing about every subject under this. We don't have so many devotees dying for anything. Except that one time I told Radhanath Maharaj went into the Brahmacharya Ashram in Radha Gopinath Mandir, and he asked the devotees, he said, "Is anyone here willing to die for me?" And all the Brahmacharis were quite confused. So Radhanath Maharaj repeated, "Can anyone here die for me?" Radhanath Maharaj. And the one Brahmachari said, "Yes, Maharaj, I'll die for you." So then Radhanath Maharaj took his dhotis, which were, you know, and said, "Here, these are the dhotis. Please dye them saffron." So at least someone was willing to die for Radhanath Maharaj. But we're talking about something else. Conviction that even put ourselves in a situation where we have to sacrifice something, where we have to rely upon Krishna. We have to trust Krishna that he can actually, he's the controller. So that's conviction. Only that can lead to eternal experience. Only that way can Krishna reveal to us. Otherwise, as I mentioned before, I know there was one devotee, we couldn't convince him to go on book distribution. A lot of devotees were like that. Anyhow, there's one particular one. Because he was always afraid that if he went on book distribution, he might get attacked. So for 2 years, he wouldn't go out. And then one day, someone forced him to go out. And the first person he approached took his fist and slammed him into the face and knocked him out. So he woke up, and then he was convinced, "See, I told you." So he was meditating for 2 years on how someone would attack him. And so Krishna was so kind, he sent, because of this intense desire to prove his point, Krishna actually sent someone and knocked him out. So Krishna is fulfilling all desires. So we desire to take shelter of him, then he'll also give us shelter. But if there's nothing, there's no reason to try and take shelter of him, there's no reason to go make an extra effort to try and think about him and pray to him and appeal to him, then why should Krishna, he won't do anything because we're not asking him. Therefore conviction. And only through conviction, when we apply our lives and realize Krishna is there, can we understand what Krishna's mission is. That is loving relationships with him and his devotees. And trying to develop skill in that. Not skill in standing on one finger or whatever else. Develop skill in loving relationships. And only when we develop skill in loving relationships can we actually have the purity of actually developing loving relationships, developing the character of a pure devotee who's absorbing loving relationships with every living entity in the basis of Krishna consciousness. So that's our goal. So Krishna begins by telling us about the mode of goodness, because only in goodness can we understand these things. Otherwise, those are in ignorance and passion. For them, this is just all a dream. This is all just a theory. But in the mode of goodness, it becomes clearer what we're here for, what our duties are, what everyone's duties are, and then we can appropriately apply them. So for the sannyasi, or for anyone else, they should encourage all of us to have a morning program every day. Not only chant our rounds, but hear and chant about Krishna in the association of other devotees. That's the whole thing in the Bhagavad Gita. Associate with devotees and hear and chant with each other. That's the when Krishna says, "I'm God," in the 9th, 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verse number 8, the next thing he says, "Machita machkita prana bodhiyantesh parashparam." The way we realize Krishna is God is we exchange our realizations with each other. Sometimes it produces satisfaction, sometimes ecstasy. And at the end of that exchange, then we become more and more enthusiastic to do what? We become more and more enthusiastic to consistently, carefully, lovingly, enthusiastically, with care and attention, engage in Krishna's service. That's the whole thing. And then Krishna reciprocates and reveals himself. It's all quite simple, but we can make it very, very complicated. And therefore, make it so complicated, we do everything except for what Krishna wants us to do. Or as they used to say, if we simply distribute books, then everything will come. And nowadays, sometimes devotees think, if we simply get everything, then one day we'll be able to distribute books. So we have to understand that if we simply hear and chant about Krishna regularly, consistently, try to assimilate the knowledge and apply it in our lives, then the result will become Krishna conscious, which is the goal of this movement. And if we do everything else except for that, then we'll get everything else except for that, love of God. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Everything becomes so quiet when you ask for questions. You can practically hear everyone thinking. Anyhow, thank you very much. Grandarashima Bhagavad Gita Kijai.